Incredible story. It's an incredible, true story. Okay. It's not so known, that parsha. Not so well known, this parsha. But between the two wars, there was a great poverty in many areas of Europe. There was great poverty. We always think about, you know, the Second World War, and before that, life was all rosy. It wasn't the case. Of course, the World War was the unprecedented what went on. But there was a lot of financial difficulties before that in numerous, in very many countries in Eastern Europe. And yeshiva suffered tremendously. In fact, Reb Chaim Oizer Gozhinsky, the Gadol Hador, one of his leadership, much of his leadership was the leader of the Klal Yisrael in that very generation between the wars. His prime focus was on supporting financially the yeshivas. He established Valley yeshivas, and very many Yidden were extremely poor and impoverished, and he helped make them survive. And at one point, Peranovitz yeshiva was suffering tremendously, and the yeshiva, Reb Chonon Wasserman, could not fund the yeshiva. Simply, there was not enough food for the yeshiva to survive. As simple as that. And the Bochim were hungry, they skipped meals, and he didn't know what to do. He asked his rabbi, the Chofetz Chaim, how what to do. And the Chofetz Chaim told him, well, you've got to go to America. You've got to go to America to collect some funds, because America was in a much better... Yes, it was a Great Depression, but there was more money there than anywhere else. So, Rabbi Chonon Wasserman, Zeicher Tzadik V'Kodesh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Yisdom, as we know, Rabbi Chonon was killed in the war. It's an incredible story how Rabbi Chonon was, a few years later, after he was killed in the war in an unbelievable way. But let's leave this out for now. Rabbi Chonon Wasserman, the Shiva of Baranovich, he went to America as instructed by the Chofetz Chaim on behalf of Vadi Yeshivas and in his own yeshiva. And he went to New York, and in New York he was very unsuccessful. He went collecting here and there and everywhere, and it just didn't quite work out. It didn't quite work out, primarily because they didn't have a lot of money in their own right, and also they weren't particularly keen to support. It just didn't work out. He had very limited funds, and he stayed there for weeks and weeks, despite the journey taking so long. He just didn't put it off. And then at one point, he was close to despair, because he felt like going back home, and he had not raised sufficient funds. So there was one particular person that told me, no, why don't you go to this Reb Hirsch over here on the other side of Manhattan. Reb Hirsch is a very, very wealthy man, and perhaps he can help. But you should just know that he's very stingy. He's a miser, great miser. But perhaps you can get something out of him. Perhaps you can. And Reb Chonon had no choice. He said, well, I've got, I suppose, very little choice, and can't lose. And he said, he's going to try to go to this Reb Hirsch. So he went to Reb Hirsch, who had this incredible palace, who lived in immense wealth and in fortunes. He went to Reb Hirsch, and he managed to somehow get in, and he got into the study. And he had this conversation with Reb Hirsch. Now, Reb Hirsch was a very wealthy entrepreneur, and his business was production and sales of buttons. That was his buttons, you know, as we have in coats and jackets, and buttons, normal buttons. And he amassed a huge fortune by the production, and he had a few factories, production and sales of buttons. And as so Reb Chonon went up to this, to Reb Hirsch. Reb Hirsch says, how can I help you? You're here for some tzedakahs. In a very looking down kind of way. He says, you're here for some charity. Can I give you some charity? Reb Chonon says, yeah, I'll tell you, actually, I want something very specific. So Reb Hirsch says, well, how can I help you? What would you like? He says, one little thing I want to ask. He says, yeah, what are you coming for? Yeshiva or for a kol? What are you here for? Says, no. I'll tell you what I'm here for. All I want is actually a button. Is it a button? He said, yeah, you sell buttons, you make buttons. I need a button. Because he's turned around the frack, and he said, listen, I've got a frack over here, and my frack, there's one of the two buttons come off, and he showed him that was stuck at the case. He's got one of my buttons are missing. Would you please be able to give me a button? And then Reb Hirsch looks at him and he says, you came here for a button? He says, yeah, it's a button. He was producing millions of buttons a day, yeah? He said, a button? You want a button for me? He says, yes, please, can I have a button this size? It looks like this. Can you have a button? He looks at him, well, you've come all the way from Baranovich. How many weeks did that take you? He says, it took me about 4 weeks. It took you 4 weeks, you've traveled 4 weeks, and you came all the way to Manhattan by train, all the way there, and you've come to ask... You've gone through all these burdens, you've paid all this, and you've done all this to ask me for a button. You want a button? You've gone all those journeys, all these travels for a button? So Reb Hirsch says, yes, I want a button, please. He says, are you crazy to go through all these hardships for a button? So Rabbi Chanan says, you think this is crazy to go all that way for a button? He says, yes, it is crazy to go all that way for a button. He says, listen to what you are saying. Listen to what you are saying. You have come for much further than Baranovich. You have come, your neshama comes from the Kisei HaKavoit. Your neshama, your soul comes from all the way up there. And trust me, this is a lot further than the distance between Baranovich and New York is a lot closer in the distance. Your neshama has come from all the way up there to this world. And you think this neshama has come to this world just for some buttons? To produce buttons? To sell buttons? You think your neshama, that's the purpose of your neshama, to do all that journey just for buttons? It doesn't make any sense. Surely your neshama is here for some greater reasons than that. And your pros, if you've got all that wealth, you should probably do something productive with it. He should probably do something. It doesn't make sense. The shabbos come all the way just for some buttons. He was blown away. He was absolutely blown away. And now, yes, the rest is history. He was so blown away by this. He said, absolutely. He took out his checkbook and he gave an incredibly huge donation to Baranovich Yeshiva, more than he expected from the whole journey. And not only that, because he was so blown away by Rabbi Chanan's point, he was so impressed by Rabbi Chanan's point that he said he wants to take Baranovich Yeshiva as one of its, he wants to have this chos of supporting it for the next years. And that's exactly what he did. From becoming a great miser, from this conversation, he became the greatest, not the greatest nadvan, the greatest donor of Baranovich Yeshiva for the years to come. He was still a miser. He was a frum, but he was a miser. Yeah, that's quite a story, no? It's quite a story. Yeah, so that's, it's good, yeah? Good one? Okay, good. If you say you don't like it, I have to look for another one, but, okay. Yeah, because we all tend to sometimes forget what we're here for, and yeah, but, yeah.
Test
it on
passengers.
Could have been a good story for the role that you had the other day.
Yeah.
It could have been a good one for her.
I'll remember
it
next time.
Okay. Simon Shin Mem Vav. We're doing the Ramah part of it anyway. I want to just finish off about the conversation we started yesterday about Kafa, because this is so important. We will talk about Kafifas at a later point, but please, we must remember, I looked at the Northwest London Eruv publication. It was published some 15 years ago approximately. And it discusses, I forgot now the area. In Northwest London, a part of a wood, willows, wind. An area within the Northwest London Eruv which was questionable because of, it might be a kafif. So again, that's it. So what is it exactly? Can you describe the area?
Wealdon, between Cricklewood and Golden.
Is there like a whole area there which is green, not residential?
Wealdon?
Yeah,
behind Brencroft is that?
Yeah.
It's called Wealdon Green, isn't it?
Wealdon Green, I think that's what it was called, yeah.
That's the Welsh Harp.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So one of the greatest controversies, one of the very great discussions, and I'm quoting the Northwest London Eruv publication, not the against, the pro. They in that publication, what they describe is the great challenge of the Kafifas. That whenever you are making an Eruv of a large area, you're always going to include a Kafif. A Kafif, again, is a large open area which is not surrounded for residential purpose, and that can break the whole Eruv. That breaks our Eruv. So, of course, an Eruv, by making a Tzuras HaPesach, you're enclosing all the area, becomes a Rishus Yochid. But if within that you have an area which is not residential, and it's more than 70 on 70 Amos, then that becomes a very good... So, a park, that's also part of the discussion, that a park, which is meant for public access, and it's not just a dumping area, for public access, and there's benches there, nice flowers, and nice areas that is considered a residential purpose, and therefore they discuss it, but the consensus of the post scheme is that it's not considered a question. That's okay. They consider that a head. It's not kaf of shaloi hook of ledira. That's okay. But the areas are, for instance, I know that I saw that when I looked at, I didn't have a map of the edgeware eruv, but I do have a map of the northwest line. When I looked at it again, I could see the whole Brent Cross area, which includes many of those kafifos, is precisely because of that, is excluded of the eruv because of kafifos shilas. Because the whole Brent Cross section over there, and there's areas there which are for storage purpose and like stump dumping areas. No.
Industrial estate.
Yes.
Is that considered?
Yes, very much so.
That's not really
very much. It could be a problem. It could be a problem. If it's a storage, what if it's meant for? The definition is if it is a residential purpose, it is okay. If it's not residential, hukaf ledira or loy hukaf, residential is fine. If it's non-residential, it's a problem. And therefore, storage or any industrial estate would be problematic.
Isn't that problem in Yerushalayim HaKodesh when there's quite a few industrial estates there?
I don't know which ones you're referring to. And I don't know Yerushalayim Eruv well enough.
Partial Ramayma, between Ramayma and there's Shamgar sort of area, there's loads of industrial estates up there.
Well, by now it's a lot of it is residential.
More of it's residential.
The last 10 years is a change. But previously, I don't know. So that's something to keep in mind. So Rabbi said we will talk more about these kafifas, but it's a very hot subject. Because that's a lot of the Eruvin have been puzzled. When we talk about good and bad Eruv, it's about taking this into consideration. In fact, when the Northwest London Eruv and the Edgeware Eruv were looked at very carefully by some experts a number of years ago, one of the main issues was to look at those kafifas. And again, I do remember from Rabbi Liebman, I remember him telling me that one of the Edgeware Eruv here, that one of the things they changed over the years, from the initial map onto the secondary one, was they excluded one area which was the Kaf of Shaloi Hukaf Ledira. But I've now forgotten where this is, 7 years ago when I had this conversation with him. So if you may know more, but that's I'm just keeping that. We will talk more about kafifas, large open areas within an Eruv. The Ramah says as follows. We have now spoken about Mokum Ptur. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. And the Ramah says, you now to take a key, Mekamelis, from Mekamelis, Shelifnei Gino, before a garden, Liftach, to open the linoil and to lock up, Lachse Mafteach Elov, and to return the key there. Ubilvad, top of page 400. Please use the, if you've got a Deer tradition, we're going to look at the picture on the side over here, because that's going to help us. Can you see there's a garden in the back, there's a park? A garden, whatever it is, it's meant to be representing it is. You see, it is. And in the front, you've got a kamelis. Okay, now the question is, you've got an area between. It's this area in between. So let's look at what he says over here. Now, the problem with this is a person standing on this step over here. This person standing on his step, is he allowed to take something from the Kamelis, then put it onto the area in the back? Is it a person allowed to stand there or not? So, the Moy is now telling us that no, you've got a problem over here. To not even think this is a Mokum Tu and therefore it's okay. Rather, you have to look at it, and you see that it's Yud Tfochim high, and it's Dalet Tfochim wide. What does that mean? Since this step now, you go to three steps, you go up to three steps, then you've got the area which is covered, as it were. What does that make this area now? Yud and Dalet? Yeah. This is Rishus Yochid. This is Rishus Yochid. And that's what he says. This now becomes Rishus Yochid. Width. Yeah. So he says as follows, Shrei Yibinim Askufa, if you've got a step, Shrishus Yochid, Shrishus Yochid. Keep going. Such as, Shigavoya Asor V'chov Ab, if it's high, 10, and wide, 4 Tfachim, Oy, or Shiesh L'shtei, Mechitzes Min Atzorim, if there's 2 Mechitzes on the side, it's the same thing, who will become Rishus Yochid. Shana Chovin Ab, Mashkoif, Olehon, there's a Mashkoif on top of it, like a, very good, Linter on top of it. V'chov Ab, 4 Tfachim, Do'oz Ab, Rishus Yochid, it becomes Rishus Yochid. Half a picture in a verse, so even if it wouldn't be, you'd fucking high. So, the point that the Ramah is telling us here now is that do not, at times you could have such a stepping area, which is a Mokum Patur. Yes, it can happen. And if you've got a Mokum Patur in between, then it's great news. Because that means you can just stand on the step and, if it's a Mokum Patur, then what could you do in theory?
Take something from there.
Exactly, you could take something from one area, stand still for a minute and say, and then afterwards put it on the next, because you're doing Tzad Ech Mokum Patur, which is fine. However, now he's telling us that watch out, because at times, such as in this example over here, it is not a Mokum Patur, it's a Rosh Hashanah, and hence, you cannot take it from the Rosh Hashanah, from the Kamaris onto this, because you're over on Tzad. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. If you're... You're right, but if it's a shoes to rice, if it's a shoes to abon, it would be okay. Good, but very good, very good. Yeah, Miu. Continues the Ramah. Mut also lahachnis miaskuf lo rishus yochid ipcha. You're not to go from this askuf from this step to rishus yochid or vice versa. The Chashinon, we are concerned. Shem lo yatik lo abon. Perhaps it's not four tefachim. This, Rabbi says, the point that we made earlier, that you've got that you, either way, he may not help. With the assumption that this is Mokum Patur may not be correct, because we learned the halacha that if you've got a Mokum Patur in a kamlis, what happens to this Mokum Patur? A Mokum Patur in a Karmelis? What? Becomes a Karmelis. So therefore, if, so that's going back to your point in a way, that if one of them is Shoshochet, the other one is a Karmelis, you anyway can't use the step as a Mokum Patur, because a Mokum Patur in a Karmelis becomes a Karmelis. This is Erumim for tonight. Page 366. A little bit too short halachas before we move on to Simon Shin Lamed Ches. Siv Gimel tells us as follows: Ein sochin es akarka. You may not smear the floor. And you're not allowed to wash it. So there is an issue of smearing. It looks like what Mishnah Berurah explains in Seif Cotton Tezvav. The ways was to take oil and smear it on the floor, on the tiles of the bath house. Take some oil and smear it around. Now to me it sounds like not such a brilliant idea. You take, in the bathhouse, there was stones, you take oil and smear it around.
Like very slippery.
Very slippery. I would step away from there. Yeah, absolutely. Health and safety. Yeah, absolutely. But that was done. And the reason for that was, it will be part of the bathhouse process, who to go into after you have the nice, nice bath. And remember, this bath would have to last for a week, yeah? So afterwards, you go onto the stones, which is full of oil, and you relax a little bit on it, and that's how the oil gets absorbed in your body, and that's good for your skin. Fancy that?
No,
it doesn't really talk to me, but that was done. So you're not allowed to take that, you're not allowed to smear the floor with oil on Shabbos. Okay. Okay. Seif Dalet, also letzadet chobis ala oretz. Now letzadet means, is such a word still in Ivrit nowadays, letzadet? Because what it means is, Mishnah Berurah explains in Seif Kot Yudches, shu metzadet al shetamoit bekaka yofe, al ide atzidut, you take a barrel, also letzadet chobis ala oretz. You take a barrel, and you don't want it to roll, you don't want it to tilt, you don't want it to, so what you take the barrel and you squeeze it onto the floor. You make it like all stand straight. Letzadet, does that word still exist? No, so also the tzadet chovis ala oretz. You're not to take this barrel of wine, which is pretty heavy, and bring metzadet it. What's metzadet? You squeeze it onto the floor, like going like this. Exactly, that's why you're not allowed to, because choifer normally are digging. So he says as follows: the kivin shekveida, because it's heavy, it's got great weight. Yovolashvizgumois, what you're gonna end up doing, obviously, you're gonna make the floor all even. Yeah, it's a good way. Remember, these were all earthen floors, and you've got a very clever way now of making the floor all even. You're taking this heavy bowl and you're just squeezing it a little bit here, a little bit there, and you're gonna have a very nice and even floor. So in order to prevent that, Chas v'Shalom, to happen to be mashvigumois, we're not even allowed to put the barrel in its place and turn it and squeeze it to make it all straight, because you're going to end up straightening floors elsewhere. Makes sense. So barrel is not allowed to be squeezed onto the floor to make it all stand straight. Okay, having said all that, we're now ready for Simon Shilamet Ches. Simon Shilamet Ches is Dvorim Asurim B'Shabbos B'Tei Hashmar Askol. Music on Shabbos. Now, we don't tend to play music on Shabbos, but we need to know why. Why we're not allowed to play music on Shabbos? What's wrong with taking out a trumpet? What's wrong? Guitar? Anybody? Violin? What's wrong with it? An old-fashioned piano? Fixing it. And we need to know also, what we're going to be discussing over here is, what's the halacha of clapping? What's the problem with that? We'll know that some people refrain of clapping the regular way. Is this, how do you clap on Shabbos? When you get very excited, lechadoidi? You clap with the hand, very exciting in Chadoidi, and perhaps not so much in Kol Yaakov yet, but in Shtivl, I'm sure this is Mashmash B'chol Yoim. So, Ashmas Koil, what's the halacha of Ashmas Koil? Beklei Shir also. Now, music with any musical instrument is also. Havolehakish ala deles, but. So, musical instrument is also. We'll see soon why. Havolehakish ala deles, but. To, lehakish ala deles. V'chiyotzeboy. Shenodech shir muta. When you are, what's that called again? That thing on the door? What is it called?
Knocker.
A knocker? Old fashioned knockers, the metal things. So, that you're allowed to do. Why? There's also it's not really a musical instrument, but you are producing a sound. And why is that okay to knock on the door with this knocker? It's not so common anymore.
But you can't.
So use a knocker. I don't want to be misquoted yet. Shulchan Aruch tells us it's muta. Soon we'll see soon why perhaps it may not be. But Shulchan Aruch clearly said it is muta. But let's step back a little bit. Why is musical instruments on Shabbos also? So the Ramah tells, the Shulchan Aruch, Mishnah Berurah tells us in Sifkot Aleph, Bekleishir. Lav dafka Bekleishir, not only with regards to musical instrument, Elo af Beyad. This is also referring to clapping Beyad, hand. Kugoin, such as Dakus Kafel Kaf, to clap with palm on palm. Hey chaduch derech simcha, when it's great joy, v'shir, music also, k'mo shkosav, simon shilamites, has discussed later in simon shilamites, if given mitam, the reason being, shama yisakin klei shir, perhaps you may end up producing a klei shir. You may fix it. So we know, there's a halacha, there's an issur d'oraisa of fixing a musical instrument which is broken. So if you fix that, that's an issur d'oraisa. Now the thing is, I can understand a little bit why I can understand this gzeira a little bit. If you've ever experienced anybody playing the violin or clarinet, or any musical instrument, there's always something like the, what are they called? They're not called strings. What are they called? The strings. Okay, let's call them the strings. So they sometimes break, and then have you ever seen it? You have to tighten it on top, that like screw kind of thing, you have to tighten it. That is an issur d'oraisa. And here comes the thing. You need a bit of expertise to do that. But anybody who plays that instrument knows exactly how to do it. So on the one hand, it's an expert thing, which therefore makes an issur d'oraisa. On the other hand, it's something which anybody who plays that instrument, he knows exactly how to do it. And he does it every time he plays, that string might just go, and he's going to replace it. Certainly anybody who plays a clarinet, or piping kind of instrument, there's that mouthpiece which can easily go. And then what they do, they take it out, and they quickly replace it, and it's tighten it, and they replace it. And there's some expertise required to do that, which makes it into an issur d'oraisa, but they know how to do it, and they do it like this. And therefore, it's quite obvious, they're playing that music, they're all into it, and it's sounding so great, and suddenly that string goes, and you want to replace it because they can't stop themselves. And yet, so I can understand why a person is, especially when it comes to music, people get very drawn to music. There's something, kayacha mashiach, the music has got tremendous kayach. And therefore people may easily end up doing that. And therefore, Chum had to put a stop here. He said, no, don't even start. Don't even start, because it is too close to a Torah transgression. To not play the music with an instrument, because you may end up doing an Issa D'oraisa. And that's the reason behind it. Now, what's a bit difficult perhaps to understand is that why is it, pardon?
Clapping.
Exactly. What can you fix already by clapping? Why is clapping so categorically also? Well, clapping, what are you going to... It's a bit far-fetched.
As you're clapping, you might take a musical instrument and start.
Ah, I see, you might... It's so clear. Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, perhaps it's like a bit more far fetched, but perhaps. Then we are pretty much
finished.
Yeah.
So the
shine is a little bit about clapping hand. It's a bit more harder to understand, but certainly musical instruments can. Okay, so the Maaseh Mishabu, I just want to finish off with that. Mishabu does say that Imir Tzilakos Kaf al Kaf Kedei Lisameach Atinuk Velashtikoi. If a person wants to clap his hands to calm down the baby, you're allowed to do that. He allows us Zek Klach Hazeh V'Shori. He says, you're allowed to Klach Yad V'Shori. That's a big chiddush, because he said that if you can clap klach hayad. Here's the Mishabur tells us that if you're not clapping the normal way, but you're doing it in an irregular way, then that's mutter. Now, it's for people that are not so particularly musically involved, I always wonder, is that really called klach hayad? Because they more often end up doing like this than the regular way. Yeah, if you end up doing it. But the question is, the point is that klach hayad is mutter in an irregular, to clap in an irregular way is mutter. We'll discuss this a bit more next week, Be'ez Hashem. Okay, so what we discussed this evening is there's an issa of Hashmas Kol Bekli, and Lahakish Adalas is mutter, and we explained the reason behind it, and much more on this, Be'ez Hashem, next week. Good evening and good Shabbos to all.